Blog Talk Radio.
Frontier Beyond Fear Blog Talk Radio Program. I'm Susan Larison-Dance, and I'm so happy to be welcoming you all back here today. This show is starting to feel like a very regular occurrence, since this is the third time this week, and I'm just so happy to be expanding the show and to have you with me here today. Today we have a returning guest who I know that you all enjoy, and he has some very special things to share with us today, and that is Mark David Gerson. And Mark David has actually been with this show from very close to the beginning as a guest, and I'm just so happy to be highlighting his work as it continues to unfold. He is a creativity catalyst and a very prolific writer. He is an award-winning author. He's won multiple awards for multiple books. He is a screenwriter, and he is getting into filmmaking. And his latest book that he just released is called Writer's Block Unblocked, 7 Surefire Ways to Free Up Your Writing and Creative Flow. And as soon as he released it, it just started skyrocketing on Amazon in terms of the books on writing. It's in ebook form. It's also on several other platforms, and I'm sure he'll talk to us about how you can get the book. But it's certainly taking the world by storm and really helping people right away. Mark David is well known for a couple of things that he's done. He wrote The Voice of the Muse, Answering the Call to Write, which is very much related to his latest book, and he also wrote a companion meditation CD set, and really this latest book just it enhances and expands the voice of the muse in many very powerful ways. So I encourage you to really look into the full set of what he can offer you in this area. Another thing that he's put out there that's been out and is getting thousands and thousands of views is his You Are a Writer meditation, which is actually from the CD, only it's in a YouTube form, and there's a link to that on the page, the show page today. And then there's the other side of Mark David, which is also a very powerful part of his writing presence, which is his Quintana Trilogy series. He is a well-known visionary fantasy novelist, and his first novel in this series was The Moon Quest, which also won awards. And he has been writing so prolifically in the last 3 years that he not only finished the 2 sequels to The Moon Quest, which will be out at a time that he announces, and he also finished the screenplays for all 3 films. So if anyone can assist us with writer's block, Mark David is the person. His website is markdavidgerson.com. If you choose to go over there, if you do go over there during the show today, be careful because you don't want to jump off the show page. So you might want to be careful to open it in a new window. If you're in the chat room as a guest, one thing I want to note is that if you get a Blog Talk Radio login, which is easy to obtain, you can actually comment and ask questions in the chat. And we welcome guests. And I just wanted to let people know that if you happen to want to participate in the discussion there. So with all of that said, I am just going to bring Mark David here on the line, and I'm just really so happy to have him back with us today. Hello, Mark David. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Susan. Thanks for having me back on the show.
You know, I think I'm having you come back so often. I'm getting more relaxed with my intros. They become more and more free-flowing because it's just I know that many people listening are already aware of your work, and yet I know there are many more that are coming to this topic because it's something that quite honestly is plaguing many of us, or we perceive it as plaguing us, which I think you're going to assist us with today.
Yeah, I mean, although writer's block is in the title, and it's there, of course, because everyone uses the term, I'm not entirely convinced that it's real or that it that it actually exists. And so, and certainly we can talk about that over the course of our time together. In fact, there is a section in the book, and actually in The Voice of the Muse, although the material is different, that is called the myth. Well, actually, it's called The Myth of Writer's Block in The Voice of the Muse, and it's called The Myth, plural, of Writer's Block in The Writer's Block and Block Book, because it's a term that we have created that I think helps to perpetuate being stuckness.
Yes.
So I think the first thing to do is to stop calling ourselves blocked, and I do talk about that in the book as well.
Yes, and that's why I think it's so much based on perception, that the more you say, I'm blocked, I'm blocked, I'm blocked, the more blocked we feel and we perceive it that way.
Well, I think that's true of anything. You know, we give things power by both what we call them and what we don't call them, and how we choose to own them. And the moment you say, I'm blocked or I have writer's block, you're owning that.
Mm-hmm.
And, or more to the point, it's owning you.
Yes, yes, very much so. And I think, I know that just through my own process, and I suppose, I think I've said it in the intro, but just to be really clear to people listening, is we're not even just talking about writing today, even though that's the most obvious place that people often talk about blockages, but we're talking about the creative flow in general, that these techniques can apply to the creative flow in general. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. And I even want to take that one expansive step further and say that it's not only writer's block, and it's not only blocks experienced by creative people in their creative work, but what I talk about in this book and what I talk about in The Voice of the Muse really applies to life in general. And if we have a block in our creativity, I can assure you that we have a block in our lives. And if we have a block in our lives, then there's probably a place where that's showing up in our creativity as well.
Yes. I have found in my own experience that sometimes we can also have this perception of being blocked in one creative area, and then another area emerges. In fact, that just came to mind. As we're going to talk today, I know I'm going to be thinking about my own process because I keep thinking about how my own writing has been delayed, and yet at the same time, I've been creating this radio show. So sometimes, isn't it true that we may even put false perceptions and judgments onto ourselves, like saying, I'm blocked, when all along you're actually creating something really, really special, but for some reason it may not be the thing that you thought you set out to create right at first.
No, absolutely. And there are other one of the seven surefire solutions in the book is titled Learn to Tell the Right, WRITE time, because there are all kinds of reasons why we're not writing, and some of them may have to do with fear and resistance and writing about things that we try to write about things that we don't really care about. And sometimes it has very much to do with timing. It may not be time for you to move forward on your books, and it may be that this radio show, for example, for you, Susan, is giving you the life experience you need in order to pick up and move on your books. I certainly had that experience, and we may have talked about this before with the Moon Quest, where I stopped writing for I think it was 5 or 6 months. Life kind of got in the way. I had a huge, major transition and transformation in my life. And when I picked up the book again 5 or 6 months later, I wasn't sure if, maybe I had moved past it. And when I picked up the manuscript, and very, very hesitantly and very, very kind of terrified, began to read it, I realized when I was done with those, I think I had about 100 manuscript pages, I realized that what had happened was that I had to stop writing when I did because I didn't have the emotional depth and the life experience and whatever the book required of me to continue until that moment. So those were
yes.
five moments of personal growth that then allowed me to finish the book and to finish that first draft in a few months. So yeah, I mean, we really so much about this and about, frankly, pretty much everything we talk about boils down to discernment.
Yes, and you know that it is so true that we're all on a journey, and you know, even my own process here, I sense that if I had written when I first felt I was going to write, having written anonymously a lot, but not an actual book, I really didn't have the full depth of life experience that would have allowed me to write as effectively as I wanted to. I mean, I'm sure I could have written something that was worthwhile, I don't doubt it, but it really wasn't time. And, you know, it's amazing how synchronicities occur, things kind of come together, you know, perhaps, and this can be happening to other people in other ways, friendships develop, different people come into your life. You know, in this case, I'm interacting with more publishers because they're bringing
mm-hmm.
people to this show, and what an interesting thing that is. And that's an example of a synchronicity that I sense could ultimately be very positive on my own path. And I think the other thing, too, is sometimes, again, you don't realize how your creativity is going to come out. You may think that you're only going to do this one thing. I mean, your life, Mark David, let's talk about filmmaking, for example. You know, filmmaking to you is like radio to me, I think. Although I don't know. I mean, we both have some really amazing, unexpected things happening creatively. So why don't you talk a little bit about that, and just briefly as to how that emerged out of your creativity.
Sure. Well, again, I just want to back up for a moment and touch on or expand on something that you said a moment ago.
Yes, please do.
And that is that, and going back to what I said about discernment, one of the things that I talk about in Writer's Block Unblocked and The Voice and Muse, and even in The Moon Quest, which is a story about storytelling, and frequently in my memoir, which is called, not surprisingly, Acts of Surrender, is that the story is smarter than I am. I mean, that's really,
yeah.
if you want a kind of foundation of my philosophy and the way I live my life, it's doing my best to trust and act on that fact. To me, it's a fact. The story knows best. The story is smarter than I am. So going
yeah.
back to your book, Susan, your books or The Moon Quest, our books knew that in order to meet their potential,
yes.
never mind my potential, their potential.
Their potential.
We had to go through other experiences to catch up with the books, with books that were already far beyond who we were in the moment of their conception.
Yes. Yes.
And so the story, the book, however you want your muse, however you want to God, however you want to characterize this. It's all parts of ourselves. It doesn't matter. It's really just aspects of us. Sends these things to us and says, you know what? I don't want you working on me right now because you need to work on yourself before you can work on me some more.
Right.
And that, again, surefire solution number five, know to tell the right time, is
mm-hmm.
what that's about. Because, again, you know, we assume that if we start, we have to finish. Well, A, that isn't necessarily true in and of itself, and the book has its own, the book, the story, the project, whatever it is, has its own imperative and its own timetable, and you're along for the ride at its discretion.
Yes, yes, and that business of the book, you know, you introduced me to this a long time ago, that the book itself is a living entity or whatever the creative work is, it exists, and it does, you can talk to the the book if you so choose.
You can, and it will talk to you, and it can be very pushy and very demanding, and more to the point, certainly at least in my experience, incredibly tricksterish.
Yes.
It will do, I mean, it sounds a little odd to be talking in, in these terms, but really, and it's a metaphor, of course, but it's grounded in truth. The book will do whatever it takes to get itself written.
Yes.
And it will lie, cheat you, the writer, to make sure that you are on the right wavelength, in metaphysical terms, of the right vibration, to do it.
Yes.
And so you are not, if all things being equal, in other words, if you're not being resistant for other reasons at this moment, if you're not writing this book, it's not time to write it.
That's right.
And can you be okay? Can we be okay with that? Because, of course, one of the things that we also always want to do, and this goes back to one of the other surefire solutions in writer's block and block, is we want to be in control. And number two talks about abandoning control. Well, you know what? You're not in control. You may think you're in control. You may act like you're in control, but it's an illusion.
Yeah.
And the prime way to really screw things up is to push that control agenda and not get out of your own way. So that's a very kind of convoluted little aside there. You were asking me about the film.
That was actually a side in itself. I'm actually glad that you did go into this instead, because we don't want to get too sidetracked on other things. The point of the film was more just that creativity finds a way to express itself. I sense that your films are much the same way. They know when they're supposed to be to come into being, just as this radio show has a consciousness in a sense of its
of
own.
Course,
and
of
and
course,
it surely
of course.
Was a trickster for me. I mean, it continues to trick me into things I don't expect, and yet they're very good things, and it comes together. So, but I think, this process of the trickster, Mark David, it continues. I mean, you've written prolifically, and yet look at where you're going now.
Well, you know, one of the things, the very first sentence in Writer's Block Unblocked is actually in the acknowledgments, and the first two sentences, and they read, I have never sought out the books I have written. Rather, they have always sought me out, often with tricksterish glee. There's not a single book, well, the sequel to The Moon Quest, yes, because I knew it was a trilogy, but none of these other books that I've written did I plan to write, did I think I wanted to write, or in the case of the memoir, did I even really at all want to write? And yet, suddenly, here's this. You know, this collection of works that have emerged out of me and through me, in spite of me.
Yes. You know, I'll tell you another thing. This is something, and I know there must be people listening out there. If they didn't hear this show a couple weeks, or I guess it was last week, I had a very prolific research-oriented writer, Frank Joseph, on. He told me something, Mark David, that is very relevant to anyone attempting to write or allowing to come forth a research-oriented book. I have always thought, well, that's going to take time, you know, because you're doing research, right? One of my books is related to research. It's the one on the mystical women. And it takes time, I keep saying. Well, he wrote a research-oriented book. He said that thing just came together in 2 months. I mean, he doesn't even know how it all just came together. And I have heard this story more and more. I mean, I'm sure some of the pieces of the research, they were all there, but the actual book just came, and almost in, just like your Moon Quest, just was there. And there's this mystifying process I'm hearing about from multiple people, and this is the first time I've ever heard it from a research-oriented writer, which is yet another genre. It's an area where that thing just came together, because it's so easy for me to say, oh, well, sure, that could happen with fiction, or that could happen, I mean, even with fiction and other types of nonfiction, it's mysterious. But that just took away my excuse, and I realized I don't need an excuse. But just that obviously the time is not now for that particular part. It may be now, it could be tomorrow, but the time was not last year. And we set arbitrary deadlines. Many people were trying to write books like I was writing before 2012. I thought it had to be out, you know, in 2011. Right. It has to be out. No, that book didn't want to be one of the 2012 books. I mean, that's just not what it is. And now it's evolved past that time frame. So, again, I'm seeing this everywhere. And the successful writers out there, it's a beautiful, mystifying process, but they just get on that flow, and there it is when the time is right.
Well, you know, certainly in terms of speed, again, going back to Writer's Block on Block, it was a book that didn't exist one day, and then 16 days later it was finished.
Yes, and
nobody,
that
frankly,
process.
Nobody was more astonished than I was.
Yeah, and it's you would never know it. I mean, see, that's the amazing thing about these books. Yeah, it's almost, I would, we're so honest. All of these writers are so honest to talk that way because you would think there's something to be said. Oh, it took me 4 years to write. Well, I don't know if that's good or bad, but the thing is a beautiful book, an amazing book can come together really fast. And this is a very comprehensive, it is well thought out in the sense of you've been putting together the pieces for this book for a very long time, and they just all fell down onto the page. That's kind of the way
I
read it.
It's like the overnight success that took, you know, 20 years to achieve.
Yeah,
there is no such thing as an overnight success. I mean, I wrote in a blog post that the book may have taken 16 days to write, but it took at least 16 years to get to the place where I could write it in 16 days. So
yes. Exactly. And isn't that true of all of our works? If we're really reflecting our life experience, even whether it's fiction, really there's no type of book that wouldn't apply. Those pieces really do exist, and they are, the time is our entire life that's bringing it together, essentially. There is no time frame for a project except for your whole life.
Well, indeed, and there's a concept that I talk about a little bit in The Voice of Muse, which is the notion that your book already exists in its whole and completed and perfect form. And
yes.
Our job as a writer basically is, you know, to tune the radio dial to the frequency where that book exists and get it onto the page.
Yes.
And sometimes that takes 16 days, and sometimes it takes 16 years. I mean,
yes.
The Star Quest, which is the first sequel to the Moon Quest, part two of the Quintana trilogy, it took me 11 years to write a first draft. In fact, I started that first draft 3 times. So I never finished. It took me 11 years to finish a first draft. I started the first draft, abandoned it, started again, abandoned it, and finally started and finished it. So, you know, there's no, you know, as I say in everything, including my rules for living and writing on my website, there's no right way, there's no wrong way. There's a way that works for you in the moment, and there's a way that works for the project in the moment. And the fact that I wrote this book in 16 days, which, you know, frankly, still astounds me,
yes.
doesn't mean that I will, that that's going to happen the next time.
Yes.
You know, it's how clear are you? How passionate are you? How surrendered are you? Because in theory, and unfortunately it still is a theory, the more surrendered you are, the fewer drafts and the less revision you will have to do, because the more fully you will connect with that perfect form of the book.
Yes.
Unfortunately, you know, that doesn't happen. 16 days does not happen very often. And
no, that's very rare, I would think.
And, you know, a first draft that's a final draft hardly ever happens.
Yes.
And in most cases, shouldn't happen. I mean, too many writers think that that's the way it is, and it's not. So, you know, it's, again, it's about being in the moment with each draft, being in the moment with each project, being discerning, getting out of our own way, which is a lot of what my books are about, and really being in that place and trusting the process and trusting the journey.
Yes. Now, what about distractions? When we, I know you speak of this in your book, actually in both your books you talk about
it. I do.
I've heard you speak of this before. And I'll tell you, I've been caught up in that. I don't call this radio show a distraction, but I can certainly see, I'll give you a good example. I could not blog in the morning or in the day, and I thought I had to, Mark David. I thought, I don't know why I thought I had to blog in the morning or in the day, but I would have a gazillion other things to do rather than blog. Well, finally, I forced myself to blog every night when I don't have a lot of time. And you would think you'd say, no, I have to go to bed, or there, that would be a good distraction, like sleep. But no, it's the fact that I was making all kinds of excuses when it really was quite simple to put something out. And that's important for me in my process right now, is to consistently be writing every day. It just turns out night was the time, because everything else was done. The distractions were done, and it's writing time now. And somehow that's working.
Well, and I think that is the key, is what works for me today.
Yes.
So you may wake up tomorrow morning and writing at night doesn't work anymore. Too bad.
That could be true.
You find a new time. But, I mean, one of the reasons that we can get blocked is that the routine we have created or think we have to have is not appropriate to us at this time, is not appropriate to this particular project or to this particular draft or this, you know, this particular phase of the moon, frankly. You know,
yeah. I mean,
it's, again, I go back to that word discernment. What works today? Whatever works today is what you do. You know, for me, my way of dealing with distraction, this was particularly true on those first two drafts of the Moon Quest, when I was so incredibly resistant to this story. I mean, it was resistant because it was a story that was pushing its way through me, kind of like the birth canal, but I didn't know what was going to come out, and I didn't know anything about the story. I was just discovering it day by day, and for someone who had all kinds of control issues, that was very uncomfortable. And so I would look for excuses not to write. What I ended up doing was saying, the best way for me at that time, it doesn't work for everybody, is to write first thing in the morning before I do anything else, before the day's distractions can pile up, as I look for more and more distractions to avoid having to write.
Yes.
Because so some of the distractions you're talking about, Susan, are things that just have to get done. But sometimes
we create distractions so we don't have to write. Yeah, you know, I mean, as a mom, and I couldn't do anything in the morning.
Course.
So there's
you,
an
you
example
have,
of just,
yeah.
Well, yeah, everyone has a different process, like you say.
So, again, for the Moon Quest, I knew that if I wrote in bed, I actually would stay in bed and write, or get up, do what I had to do, and come back to bed.
Yes.
So that the day would not intrude until I had done the most important thing in the day, the thing that I was most scared to do.
Yes.
I did it first, I got it done, and not only did I feel good because it was done, but I didn't create all kinds of unnecessary distractions to keep myself from doing it, so I actually freed up more time for myself during the day, because before that I would have said, well, I have to do this, which I didn't really have to do, but I wouldn't write, you know. So it's important to find the rhythms and the routines that work for you and to be open to them needing to change. Because
yes.
from one day to the next, from one draft to the next, you know, your routine may be different, Susan, during the school year than during the summer because you have a son.
That's right. And, you know, I think we have these rules. How many times have I heard the term morning papers? Any writer? I've heard
right.
that term.
Well, and
I know it's important for a lot of people, and I don't discount it. And there are a lot of shoulds around these sorts of things, like I should be writing morning papers or my version of it. But I kind of had to release it.
There's a chapter in Writer's Block called Listen to Your Language, which is filled with phrases, words and phrases that it would be wise to avoid. And don't use the word should. And the very last one is should in any context.
Yes. Yeah.
And supposed to in any context, and can't or don't dare or not as good as or not enough. I mean,
yes.
We use all these words, or the first one, of course, is block or blocked, or impossible. We use all these words and phrases to diminish ourselves or to make excuses for ourselves or to avoid. And the moment we start paying attention to what we, you know, what our language is telling us about ourselves, I'm not saying to censor, I'm saying be aware, then we have an opportunity to make some shifts that will make a difference.
Yes. And, you know, the other thing that I'm seeing with the whole writing process is that giving myself that space to write, and now that it's starting to open up more, I sense that it expands. You know, that now I'm thinking, okay, I'm doing this at night, and then there's something else I know I'm going to be doing in the day. Or like you say, maybe at some, and it'll be writing. You know, maybe I'll write blogs at night and books by day. Who knows? But that I do sense. I sense the book will come. But, you know, another big area, and this is a big area for everyone, and it's certainly one for me, and it's something you do address, is what does fear have to do with it? Because some of the things I'm personally called to write require, and I don't know if I'm going to have the courage to do it or not, requires tremendous courage to do it if I choose to do it in that way, if that's what comes through. In fact, let's just talk about that. If something comes through that it truly terrifies us, because of the depth of it. There could be a lot of different reasons why we could be afraid of what's coming through, and it could feel risky. You talk about risks in the writing. Why don't you address that? Since this is a show about fear, although we expand beyond that, what about if we're afraid of what we feel called to write, and that's blocking us?
Well, that is probably the primary source and cause of every block in our lives that we ever experience,
yes.
Whether it's to do with our creativity or to do with, you know, the rest of our lives, we something scares us and we pull back.
Yes.
I don't give this as an. I shouldn't.
There we go. But see, we all fall into that,
don't
we?
I don't address this as a solution, or I don't really address this in the book directly. But this came up for me both when I was teaching a memoir writing class and when I was writing my own memoir, which is, how can I say this stuff?
Yeah.
A, maybe I'm afraid, but B, maybe it'll hurt somebody else's feelings. I don't
want to. Yes. That's such the hard part with a lot of this.
So there's two things to remember. The first is, you've got to get it on the page. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yes.
That's the first thing. The second thing is, getting it on the page does not necessarily mean it's going to survive to the final published draft. All that it means is you have to get it out of you, because it's fear and it's constricting you. You've got to get it out of you and onto the page. And once it's onto the page, then you have choices to make down the line. But in the moment, you get it on the page because your focus is not how is mom going to take this, but I have to get this out of me.
Yeah.
And I'll deal with mom when it's time to deal with mom, if I even have to, because just getting it out of me and onto the page may be enough. I may not have to be in the final draft. I mean, there are things, again, going back to the memoir, because it's a really good example of that kind of writing. There are things that I was reluctant to write. Some of those are still in the book, and some of those are not. Because as I, you know, went through the revision process draft after draft and became more clear and more focused about what the book was actually about, I realized that, you know what, this doesn't even really need to be here. And that was that actually occurred with both things that I had been afraid to put down and things that were kind of favorites, like favorite stories I kind of really like to tell. But they really strayed from the spine of the book, and so they had to go as well. That's a whole conversation on revision. But the first thing to do is to get it onto the page, because whatever you're afraid of carries huge power. It carries huge power to stifle you.
Yes.
Right? You writer's block. It carries great power to free you. Because the moment you go into that, you begin to strip it of its power.
Yes.
The power that it has had over you to hold you back. It's not a bad thing. Let's just make that really clear. Fear is not a bad thing. We created these fears to protect ourselves. But what happens is that those fears kind of get into ourselves, and we move on, and the fear stays. So, you know, one of my favorite stories about my daughter in this context is when she was very, very little, she was afraid to cross the road without holding our hands.
Yeah.
Me and her mom's hand. Well, of course, and you want that. Well, you know,
yes,
over time,
at a certain age.
She does not hold my hand crossing the street anymore. And, you know, she's 13. She doesn't hold my hand crossing the street. She doesn't need to. She's not afraid of that anymore.
Right.
We move past these fears to deeper places, you know. I mean, that fear is the fear of being on your own, perhaps, or the fear of strange things or new things or fast things like cars. Well, the fear of strange and new things may not go away. It's just going to express itself differently. And
yes.
By getting some of this stuff out of you and onto the page, you get an opportunity not to address your fear of crossing the street, but to address what that fear is about.
Yes.
Now that, again, may not ever appear in the final published draft of the book. But writing is a journey. It's not a destination. And part of that journey is a journey of self-discovery. It's discovering who we are that we didn't know, what we believe that we didn't know, what we know that we didn't know, and what we think that we didn't know. And getting past, you know, our resistances, our fears around those things. So
right.
Whatever you're afraid of, you know, you have to do it. You have to get it on the page.
You know, I think another aspect of fear, and I like that this concept, and I've get it on the page, when it comes to things that we actually publish, and I will say there's some danger for me having a blog sometimes because I tell you, I say this danger in quotes, those of us who have professional lives, and this can vary. I mean, I used to be in a very conventional professional life where I was working in a PR department, and meanwhile I was anonymously writing on the front page of the Oprah website about all kinds of very controversial things. But it was
but
anonymous.
No one knew who you were.
It was anonymous.
No,
and if anyone,
yeah.
If I had done that publicly, I think I would have lost my job. I mean, quite honestly, I don't think that I could have stayed. And that job actually ended anyway, although it definitely gave me a great deal of things to help me moving forward. But even now, I will tell you an experience I had, and I know this relates to people. I just know it, is that sometimes what we feel called to write about, we can be a little bit afraid that it's going to impact us in some way professionally. I had an example where I have had a lot of issues coming to terms with the law of attraction. In fact, it's going to be an ongoing theme on this show as to how we present it simplistically often. And I have some questions about it that I'm exploring, and I'm going to explore it with multiple guests. However, when I first came to I wrote a scathing post about the law of attraction. I mean, when I was just really having some issues with it, and I lost a client the next day. Because, and I guess I thought about it, and I thought, well, you know, at first I was upset about it, but then I thought, well, I guess the person felt we weren't on the same page, and so, you know,
right.
It turns out that I was kind of writing in the moment, and I didn't totally understand it all. I was just kind of going through some things, and I still questioned some of the things I was questioning, but it left me in kind of an uncomfortable situation and feeling like, wow, you know, what I put out there can actually impact me professionally. And I know that there
are
people with very conventional
jobs.
Yeah.
Back to work.
Well, right,
yes, of course.
Well,
you know,
I think
there are things.
Yeah, go ahead.
there are things that we need to be cognizant of, and there are things that have consequences. Your first draft has no consequences.
Yes.
So
I ended up deleting that post and kind of and explaining why, because mm-hmm. I felt like I had just sort of put something out that maybe wasn't ready to go out. It was a little mm-hmm. too strong. And so sometimes there is something to this where, you know, work through things. And I guess the other thing, too, is we all need to be less judgmental. I mean, I think that we need to be less judgmental of ourselves. But isn't it true that when we write something, we're at a certain place? And so often we judge writers in saying, oh, they believe this or they believe that because that's what they wrote about. And yet, like everyone, we're on a journey. And we have to have compassion. I know compassion comes up not only for ourselves but for others, and recognize people go through journeys and question things, and that's part of being human is shifting and changing.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, a book is a fixed photograph in time,
yes.
and a human being is not.
Yes.
So that
true.
You know what we wrote a week ago may be an aspect, may still reflect an aspect of who we are today, but we may have moved on.
Yeah.
You know, this is why, you know, singers or singer-songwriters get so antsy about the big hit they had 30 years ago. Everyone is still asking them to sing. It's amazingly flattering and gratifying that it still touches people, but they're not where they were 30 years ago, and they want to move on with their material.
Yes, absolutely. And,
so,
and that happens so
thing,
often. Yes.
The great thing is that that song is still out there touching people where the writer was 30 years ago. It
that
becomes
is
a
so
library.
True.
That it
is
becomes
so
a library
true.
That's available to people. But the problem is the writer, the singer, the artist, the composer, I mean, whatever form we want to talk about, has moved on. Perhaps not completely, but certainly one would hope in some ways. So the challenge, I mean, if you're a singer, the challenge is to find new ways to interpret old material, to interpret the material as who you are now, not as who you were, you know, 30 years ago. I remember I saw Barbara Streisand in concert in Toronto in 2006, and she closed the concert. Well, one of her closing songs was a song I think she recorded on one of her very first albums called Have I Stayed Too Long at the Fair, which on that first album was very kind of whimsical. But here she is now, here she was then, you know, in her late 60s, moving toward the end of her career. And a song like Have I Stayed Too Long at the Fair has a totally different meaning if you choose to interpret it that way as the artist. So there you have an opportunity to reinterpret something. And the wonderful thing about fiction, of course, is that by its very nature, it exists on multiple levels.
Yes.
So what you reading The MoonQuest got out of it last week may be very different from what you get out of it, you know, 6, 10, 20 years from now. And both of those would be very different from what I thought I wrote.
Yes, very much so.
And that comes back to control. The artist has no control over the reader.
Yes.
Anytime you try to control that, you block yourself.
Yes, and that concept of, wow, there is really something here where you need to, as a writer or a creator, you have to give yourself space to accept those things you wrote in the past because they are still speaking to those who are in that place. I need to reiterate that. That is really important because it's part of this concept of judgment, and I will tell you, it can block you from writing in the future because, you know, I felt like in my own case, that was too scathing. Well, you know what? The more I came to know myself, I realized I have a problem with absolutes because I was raised a fundamentalist. So when
right.
I hear something like law of attraction, I'm immediately pushed away because that's like the laws I grew up with. When I hear a
right.
word like co-creation now, well, now that's a different kind of word, and I can deal with that, and it's more loving. So I've evolved, and yet there's a group of people out there that, and you know, maybe I can work with them in a different way in the future, but they still are in that place where I was, for sure, you know, that we all come from different paths and we carry those paths with us, and that's, and we speak to those who have shared part of our paths, so and then we share it with people who don't understand it, whereas someone who didn't come from that wouldn't understand why that would be an issue for someone like me.
Right.
And so that's why it's so, when you talk about writer's block, Mark David, is letting our voice out, because we all come from different places, ultimately unique places as individuals. It's so important because it just adds to, I mean, we're not allowing our authenticity to be if we can't. And that doesn't mean we have to publish everything, like you say. But I think that many people who are blocked do feel that their authenticity ultimately is coming through. And if they just allow it, it will come through. And this concept of judgment, I mean, that is so important. And you, I know you talk about that, judging.
Well, in both books, and of course, what's happening is that we're the ones judging ourselves. I mean,
yes.
Anytime we judge somebody else or are afraid of being judged, we are, you know, we're the Supreme Court justice here. I mean, we're the ones doing the mega judging of ourselves. And so it's really important, and I, you know, I address that when I'm talking about writing on the muse stream, which is kind of a free flow, stream of consciousness kind of writing, that it's a way to push that judgmental voice we all have aside. I mean, nobody wants to be criticized. Nobody wants to be attacked. Nobody wants to be humiliated. Nobody wants to be ridiculed. Nobody wants to be judged. And any time you put your authenticity out in the world in whatever form, you know, as a creative artist or simply as a human being, there's a little piece of us that says, this is dangerous. I'm going to get killed, you know, one in some form, metaphorically. And one of the values, I think, of these kinds of conversations, of your radio show, of some of the things that I write and speak about is, it's all about giving other people permission to be publicly authentic.
Yes.
Because here's the thing. If everyone were publicly authentic, nobody would need to be afraid.
That's right.
The people who are most likely to judge us and attack and ridicule us are those who are even more afraid than we are of their own authenticity, of their own authentic voice, of really going deep into what they truly know, think, and believe, as opposed to what perhaps they were taught or have found it more convenient to express.
Yes. And I have witnessed that, especially with people coming out of, we all come out of one, many of us come out of one form of fear-based belief system or another. And often, if someone's courageous enough to voice these questions, others are thinking them privately. They don't know how to say it. And sometimes they don't even know what it was that, it helps to embrace what's going on, because so often you can be easily confused. I mean, when you're coming out of fear, we're almost like children in some ways. Some of these systems, we've been indoctrinated as children. And so,
well, you know, you don't need to have been brought up in a fundamentalist religion to be indoctrinated in fear, because all you have to do is look out your window, watch TV, watch the news, read the news, go on your Facebook news feed, for God's sake, and see all the fear that's there. And it's you know, our culture, perhaps even our global culture, is built on a foundation of fear. And part of the fear is, if you remove the fear, what happens? You know what I mean? So it's because that is the foundation. And so anytime you come out against fear, or I don't even want to say against fear, anytime you promote something that transcends fear,
something
it is dangerous because whichever status quo you're operating in, I can almost guarantee you that moving out of fear is threatens it.
Absolutely, yes. Yes, so true.
And so that's where the courage comes in to get past the fear. In the Moon Quest, I wish I remembered the quote, but I don't exactly. But in the Moon Quest, the main character Toshar is told because he's being sent out on this very important journey, this Moon Quest, very reluctantly. You know, the quintessential reluctant hero, not unlike its creator. he's told to walk through. Walk through your fear, walk past your fear to the place that your destiny awaits you. Our destiny is always on the other side of our fear, always.
Yes.
And it's the fear that is the self-protective barrier. The fear is there to protect us, but it's there to protect us long after we need protection.
Yes.
And the gifts and the destiny and all the things that not we think we want, but all the things that our hearts desire, that our soul yearns for, all of those lie on the other side of that place. On the other side of that place is fear.
Yes. Yes, there, and it, I sense that it kind of builds, really, and this is probably how it really does come through, is that not having really gotten to the point where I'm writing yet about the things that I'm most afraid of, you can begin to feel them, though, kind of reaching a critical mass, so to speak. I mean, eventually it's just going to explode onto the page, so to speak. You know, it will. And, you know, sometimes they seep out in other ways, like even onto the show. You know, I might start going down some of those paths that I might be a little bit afraid of. And I already have. I have done that. And they find their way out. And it's just a process, it seems, how we manage to allow that, and that's part of it. Now, there is another area that's a little more conventional, and yet it's important because I know that it's impacted me as well, is this feeling that it's not good enough, especially if you have high expectations for yourself. Maybe someone told you in your youth you were a wonderful writer. You've had other people say, I can't wait to see your book, or whatever. And you yourself set high standards for your writing. The two aspects of this is it's not good enough, or it's going to be rejected, or maybe it has been rejected. I know you talk about rejections in your book, that you've had rejections. I've actually had rejections, although I haven't written enough to really see a lot of them. I'm sure there are writers out there listening who've had many rejections. So what about those two areas, not good enough, and I'm worried it's going to be rejected?
Okay, well, on one hand, it'll never be good enough. On the other hand, it'll never be perfect. I mean, on the other hand, it already is good. It is always good enough.
Uh-huh.
Perfection does not exist,
yeah.
Period. It ain't never going to be perfect. Ever, 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 ever,
uh-huh.
Period.
Uh-huh.
So the moment we come from that place where it's not perfect is the moment we set ourselves up for failure.
Right.
And we can talk about why it's not going to be ever going to be perfect, but let's come back to that. So the place of not of feeling not good enough is that place of needing it to be perfect, or needing it to be better. Because
yes.
If it isn't, I will be rejected, I will be humiliated, I'll be ridiculed,
yes.
All that stuff.
Absolutely.
Here's an ugly truth. Chances are, however good it is, there's somebody out there who isn't going to like it.
That's right.
There's somebody out there, at least one somebody out there, who is going to think that it's a pile of you-know-what.
That's right.
There's at least one person out there who's going to think you are positively satanic for having written it.
Probably.
there is no way on this earth that everyone is going to like what you have written. Look at J.K. Rowling, you know, multi-billionaire, huge, huge success. She has still experienced book bannings by people who think that her books are wicked.
I know people who think that, yes.
Okay, are her books perfect? Of course not. Are they good enough? I think so. They're pretty damn good. Salvador Dali, this vaguely known artist, Salvador Dali, said once, have no fear of perfection, you'll never achieve it.
Yes.
Love that quote.
That is a good one.
And the best we can do is the best we can do in a given moment. If we're writers or creative artists, each draft, each work takes our craft, takes our ability to connect with that book, that story that's in the ether is waiting for us a little bit better. The only way your book is going to be perfect is if you can attach a USB cable from your brain to your reader's brain, bypassing words altogether.
Yes.
When that happens, and you know it very well may one day,
may be telepathic someday.
But even then, talk about telepathy, you're still interpreting those signals from a personal place. You're not experiencing my experience. You're experiencing my experience through your filters. And that's, of course, exactly why those words on the written page will never be perfect, because it's absolutely impossible to take the energy, if you will, that is your idea, that is your story, and perfectly translate it into something physical like words that are at their very, very best, even at their Shakespearean best, they are only an imprecise translation, conversion of energy into little squiggles or pixels on a page or a screen.
Yes.
You will never, ever, ever experience a sunset that I experienced one day back in 1997 in Bend, Oregon. You never will. I can write about it until I'm dead. You will never experience what I experienced. Now, you may come close. And what's going to happen is you will take my description and attach it to sunsets you have experienced, maybe to events attached to sunsets you have experienced, and then you will have your experience of my Bend, Oregon sunset. And your experience of my sunset will be just as valid and just as, quote, perfect as mine was. And that's the value of this process, of this imprecise conversion process, which is you cannot have my experience, but you can have your own. As the reader.
And that is so important for us to see. I want to note that we've been so on the flow here. We're coming to the end of the live broadcast really rapidly. And so while the live audience is with us, Mark David, can you tell us about, just really quickly, where they can find out about you? And also, I know you have some teleclasses coming up. So here's your, could just talk about that for a moment.
I'll talk back. Yeah, okay.
So, and then I'll keep you on the podcast, but go ahead.
I have 5 books out right now. 2 of them are in paperback and hard copy. The all 5 are available as e-books. Most of them are available on all major platforms, Kindle, Kobo, iBooks, and Nook. Some are not available on iBooks right now. Through the end of this weekend, so through May 5th, they are all on sale for $2.99 U.S. That is the e-books, so check those out. Those include Writer's Block Unblocked and The Voice of the Muse that we've been talking about today. Starting in about 10 days, I think it's on, so it's 10 days, on May 13th, I have a teleclass, a 5-evening class by telephone on a teleconference line called Writer's Block Unblocked. And 5 or 6 weeks after that, I have another one starting called Beyond Writer's Block. And you'll find information on all of that and way, way more on my website at markdavidgerson.com, as Susan mentioned at the outset. And also my Facebook page, please feel free to look me up on Facebook or pretty much anywhere else with the user ID, Mark David Gerson, all one word. How was that for like 1 minute?
Excellent. Thank you to the live audience leaving us right now. We're going to continue in the podcast for just a moment here as we wrap up. So, okay, very good. That was like a quick drill there. But, you know, we get so involved when we're talking that the show quickly runs out, and I'm not quite sure how she managed to do it, but my dog came up to me right when we were running out of time. She may be some kind of timer that I don't know about, or maybe she hears something on the feed or something, but she did. It was like, hey, you better look up because it's running out. So that's really interesting that occurred. It's very synchronistic.
She's your producer.
Yeah, and now she went and she's laying down again.
Yeah, well, she's done her job.
Yeah, she told me, and she's happy over there. My animals are my constant companions for this show. People don't realize that, but they're here. They want to be here, and they're beginning to figure this process out of my doing the show. As we do...
Before we wrap up, I want to mention one other thing.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, you have time to share whatever.
Which is that starting a month from now, on June 4th, I will once again have my own radio show. I can't give the details all yet because I don't have all the details yet, but it's going to start on June 4th at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. It'll be an hour-long show, and I'm still working out the format, but stay tuned on my website, on my Facebook page, and I'll be and I hope that you can join me there as well.
Yes. Yes, and we're all looking forward to that, to your return to radio. So that'll be something. It's been a while since you've had some, and boy, you've come a long way in all that time. So I know it's going to be really something once it comes together. I'm sure that you're going to have some really interesting guests, so and things to share as well. So, Mark David, I have to say, thank you so much for being here today. I feel that you have a great deal to share, and as I said at the outset, it's really going to be interesting to see how your own story and your own manner of sharing continues to unfold, because there's just so much that I sense awaits that will help us all. You know, we can all benefit one another in this work, and I feel I'm really truly blessed that I happened to come across you long ago
on Twitter
at the outset. It's true, I did on Twitter. So and actually, for those listening, Mark David is the person who got me to own any kind of voice, because I was completely anonymous on Twitter. I had only written anonymously. I was terrified of writing in any other way.
And look at you now.
Yes, I mean, I'm still not writing everything that I may be called to write, but who is? I mean, it takes time to do that, of course. We just talked about that. But the thing is it's amazing how terrified I was of being out in the open, particularly as someone coming out of the evangelical church. You know, that was my blockage, and I just couldn't be in the open with that. And I finally... You know, and it's still part of my process, too. I mean, I'm not totally out, but no, on Twitter, I had no name. I was nameless until I worked with you as a coach. And
now
really
you can cross the streets by yourself.
Yes. and before I know it, I'll be driving on the interstate. And if I'm ever doing the equivalent of parallel parking in writing, then I will have arrived. Because for me, that's terrifying. I have trouble parallel parking, so or it's something I avoid. So yes, there are all kinds of analogies I could use there. So again, thank you so much. And yes, people can find out all about the many things that you're doing and the things that you will be doing, because there are just so many interesting things coming up on Mark David Gerson. com, which is right up there on the website, where people can easily find it. So Just thank you again, and I look forward to the next time with what you may have to share. I know that you are always welcome on the show because people really enjoy what you're sharing with them here. And so do
I. It's always fun to be on your show, so I'm always happy to come back.
Well, thank you so much. And by the way, if anyone's listening, I think it's perfectly fine. You're going to be on another show today. I know we're off the live show, but people do listen to the podcast pretty
yeah,
quickly.
I'm going
if
to
you
be
want
on
to just
Authors
note
on,
that.
Yeah, I'll be on Authors on the Air at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 Pacific.
Uh-huh.
And I don't have the link in front of me, but if you go to if you look me up on Facebook, it's, I think, and scroll down a little bit, there's a post from earlier this morning that has the link to this show and to that show as well. It's Pam Stack's Authors on the Air at 6 Eastern this evening. So, I'm going to be talking a lot today.
Yes, it seems that way. And I assume if there's a podcast version, you'll let everyone know at this, that show and any other shows coming up. So.
Yeah, and certainly, like with this show, it's also on Blog Talk Radio, so the archive is available almost immediately.
Oh, good.
To
good.
The live show.
Well, then people listening in the future will be able to find it if they want to hear more. So I encourage
Absolutely.
Them to. We're all in this together. I'm not in any kind of competition with any other show.
And Pam's show will also end up in iTunes. If you do a podcast search for me in iTunes, you'll find. Ultimately, that show, but bunches of others as well.
Yeah, and technically they should find this show, too, because we're in iTunes
Indeed.
Now, too. So,
right.
So that is, I'm just really glad to see your voice coming out again, that you're, we will soon benefit from all the writing that you did while you were in seclusion, or virtual seclusion. You were still writing on your Facebook and things like
sure.
that. But I think that, we will not only benefit from that, but it's really nice to have you picking things up again and really doing classes and other things. So I'm really happy to see it. So anyway, thank you again, Mark David. It's been a
thank
pleasure
you,
to have you here. So take care.
And
have
we'll
a...
talk again soon.
Yes, I hope so. All right. Thank
Thanks.
You.
Bye-bye.
And with that, I'm going to just close the show with a quick show note. This show is beginning to feel more and more like a regular show an online version of a regular show, because they really do exist, and this show is becoming one of them, because I am going to be back again on Monday. And Monday, I have quite an interesting show planned. Monday, May 6th at 12 noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, Joel Garbon and Jean Manning will talk about new energy solutions, and both of them are leaders in the worldwide movement to discover alternative energy technologies. Joel runs a nonprofit called New Energy Movement, which is connected to the most influential people in the world, essentially, who are working in this area. And Jean has written several books. In fact, Joel and Jean wrote a book together about this topic. Jean was actually a co-author on another book, Angels Don't Play This Harp, because I know a lot of people have heard of that book as well. So these are going to be some really good guests coming on the show on Monday, and I'm really honored and happy to have them coming on together. So join us again Monday, May 6th, 12 noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. And next week I actually do have a fairly full show schedule. We have 3 shows planned that week. So for all scheduling details, just go to frontierbeyondfear.com, and you can also see sneak previews of things coming up in the weeks and months to come. And there's also a way, if you feel called to do so, to support the maintenance costs of the show. If you go to frontierbeyondfear.com, you'll be able to see that opportunity as well. So thank you again for being here today. I hope that wherever you are, if it happens to be sunny this weekend, or if you're listening in the future, wherever you are, I hope that you do things to nurture your spirit, because that certainly helps me with any kind of blockage. If we just take the time to nurture ourselves in whatever setting we find ourselves. So thank you so much. Until next time.